Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Christine DiMatte, filling in for Tom Hudson this week. In less than 2 weeks, Florida lawmakers go into regular session. In the weeks leading up to that, they file their bills, put them through to committee, effectively beginning the legislative fight for them. Now, it's been pretty busy in Tallahassee, both in the State House and in the courts. Joining us is Steve Bosquet. He's the Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Tampa Bay Times. Also with us via Skype is News Service of Florida senior reporter Derek Hamm. Finally, here in the studio with me is Palm Beach Post reporter Pat Beal. Hello to everyone, and thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thanks.
Hi there.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, and we'd like to remind you that this is your discussions, too, so please let's hear from you during the show. The number to call us is 800-743-9576. Now, before we go into the Florida House and Senate chambers, let's talk about two laws that were shot down by Florida courts. One of them is known as Docs versus Glocks. Steve Bosquet, what did that law seek to do?
That was a requirement that people be have discussions with their primary care physician about gun ownership, and it's just another example of there's been a slew of these, not just involving firearms, but where this state government, state legislature, has had their actions ruled unconstitutional by the courts.
And this stems, I do believe, Steve, from a situation in Ocala in 2010. I think it was the two parents of a newborn went to see their doctor. Doctor asked them some basic questions. You know, do you have chemicals? If so, are they locked up? Do you have a fence around your pool? Do you have firearms? Are they locked up? And purportedly the parents just stormed out, and they were horrified by those questions. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't recall the details of the case. Maybe my colleagues
can I jump
do,
in?
But I don't.
Go ahead, Dara.
Yeah. So that is the case, but the court in this opinion, the appellate court found that this law was based only on anecdotes. Steve and I could go on and on. We could devote a whole show, couldn't we, Steve, about legislation by anecdote. But this was one where the court said that there was only six anecdotes. They relied on six anecdotes, and some of them were unsubstantiated, where patients took umbrage at doctors asking them about guns in the home, and said there was really no reason for it. And it wasn't a Second Amendment issue, as the state tried to make this to be, but it was really a First Amendment issue, and that this was a violation, infringement of doctors' right to free speech.
And it was a federal appeals court that struck down the law, but could it now be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court?
It could be. It would be highly unusual for the U.S. Supreme Court to take this up, because this was it was an en banc, what is called a full court review. So it was all of the judges. It was a majority of, in fact, I think there was only one dissent. So there were 11, the entire 11th District Court of Appeals, the federal court, ruled that this was unconstitutional. It would be unusual. I mean, I wouldn't predict what the U.S. Supreme Court will
right.
do, certainly. But yes, that still remains an option, whether the state will, you know, pursue that or not. I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
And on the subject of firearms, in a few minutes, we're going to be discussing a bill that would address Florida's gun-free zones. But before we get into that, another law that was blocked, this one by the Florida Supreme Court, involved a 24-hour waiting period for abortions. Derek Hamm, please tell us what was decided and why.
Well, that was decided that, again, there was that this was an unreasonable restriction on women's right to have this procedure. The court found in a split court verdict, as we see on the Florida Supreme Court quite often, that a woman would have to go back and have at least, that this would require a woman to go back to the doctor twice if she wanted, or healthcare provider twice if she wanted to have this procedure. And that was a restriction that you would not have to undergo, or a requirement that you wouldn't have to undergo under for any other medical procedure. And Justice Barbara Perriente, writing for the majority, said that it would cause irreparable harm for women, and So we'll see. I think that's pretty much it for that law.
It never really did go into effect because it was blocked so many times in the courts that it never got a chance to go into effect. Now, in the State House, there's a controversial measure that would allow women to sue doctors for physical or emotional injuries stemming from abortions. Could you tell us about that one?
Sure. It's, you know, the perennial abortion laws, they keep getting knocked down. We talked about some others, but this one would require, would give women 10 years to sue doctors if they've had an abortion, to sue doctors for basically for malpractice. And the current statute of limitations on suing for malpractice, I think, is 4 years for other procedures. I mean, it is a very, it would be a very, I don't even have the words, but I'm guessing it would be unlikely that the Senate would pass this. It's very unfriendly to doctors.
Yeah, and there are already Florida physicians that are pushing back against this plan.
That's right.
One of them
slippery slope argument.
Yeah. Well, not only that, it was one doctor, a Sarasota obstetrician, Susie Prabarakan. She says the bill would make worse the state's doctor shortage.
Increasing liability for us will add to the reputation that sometimes Florida can be difficult for OBGYNs, despite all the malpractice reforms that have happened. And I'm certain that no member of this committee wants to make it even more difficult for women to access care when they are pregnant.
For years, there's been a doctor shortage in Florida. And what this obstetrician is saying, that this is, if this law gets enacted, it's only going to make it worse.
Well, they certainly don't want to make it difficult to for people to access healthcare or to access doctors, but I don't think there's any question that the Republican-dominated legislature wants to make it more difficult for women to access abortions.
I don't think I can remember a Florida session that did not include a measure addressing abortion. But, Pat Beal, I don't recall one where lawmakers are actually begging the governor to declare Florida's problem with opioid abuse a public health emergency. Now, that I don't recall. No, not entirely. In 2011, with South Florida's pill mills. But now we've got a major problem with opioids. And my first question is, when we say opioids, what are we talking about? We're talking about heroin, prescription drugs, what?
Well, the opioids and opiates both come from the poppy plant. Opiates are heroin, for instance. And opioids are semi-synthetic versions of heroin, such as oxycodone. And we still have a terrible oxycodone problem here in Florida. But, of course, it's pretty much been eclipsed by deaths from heroin at this point.
So how bad is it?
Well, I mean, you know, CDC epidemiologists have described this nationally as America's third great heroin epidemic, the second one being in the Vietnam War. It's simply unprecedented. We haven't seen anything like it for decades. And, you know, Florida has been quite hard hit, according to some national data that we've seen, some state-by-state data that we've seen. And, you know, and the question is, what is Florida going to do about it? And that's why you see this request for a declaration of a public health emergency, which if Governor Scott would sign off on or the Department of Health chief would sign off on, could provide a lot of options for the state to do, you know, to do some good.
Now, you've just said Florida, the state, at least four times now. I think, Pat, there's a misconception that this opioid problem has been fundamentally a South Florida problem, but that's not correct, is it?
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's I think one of the hardest hit counties is actually Manatee County. They're almost an outlier. Manatee County, Palm Beach County, Broward County, of course. You can look at the larger counties, but this is an issue in the Panhandle, in the North Florida counties. And one of the reasons it's been so hard to get sober home legislation that would help rein in abuses at sober homes, is because it's been dismissed as a South Florida problem for so long. And one of the reasons we wanted to run some numbers on hospital costs related to heroin was because we wanted to show that, no, this is a statewide problem, and it's devastating in terms of finances, including the state's own finances.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be callous or quantify a human tragedy, but how much is the opioid abuse costing hospitals and costing Medicaid?
Well, in the first 9 months of 2015 alone, it cost Florida hospitals a combined $1.1 billion. That's about $4 million a day. And I think we all know the numbers have only gotten worse because the epidemic has only gotten worse. If you look at 2010 to 2015, $5.7 billion. Now, of that $5.7 billion, $2.1 billion were charges where Medicaid was the primary payer. You know, so I mean, this is something that is really actually hitting the state's pocketbook.
It's huge, and it's an emotional issue. And along with the opioid crisis, there's been a fierce debate in Tallahassee over Florida's gun-free zones. And there's a measure going through that would allow the open carrying of guns and allow firearms in airports and other areas that are currently gun-free in Florida. Now, Steve Bosquet and Dara Kam, was that a response to the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting, both, none, or was it in the works before either of these tragedies?
This has been filed before, and actually, I spent a lot of time talking to Marion Hammer, the longtime lobbyist for the NRA here, and the folks on the pro Second Amendment side, the folks who advocate for a greater expansion of gun rights, say that the airport attack in Fort Lauderdale is an impetus as to why we need to eliminate gun-free zones, because the people who were attacked that day in Fort Lauderdale could not defend themselves. So if I had to handicap it, I think this bill passes the Florida House. But I think, as Dara mentioned on another issue a minute ago, these kind of bills tend to get gummed up in the Florida Senate. It's even though they've got a tremendous number of new members, the Senate, by temperament, by history, by tradition, is more moderate. They're going to listen to law enforcement, and there's going to be a parade of law enforcement people coming to Tallahassee mm-hmm. saying this is a bad idea to expand gun-free zones.
And right now, we'd just like to give out our number again, 1-800-743-9576. Easy way to remember is 800-743-WLRN. We need to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a threat to Florida's open records law.